Hello, I'm Connie Rotella, and welcome to our Triple Threat podcast. I'm super excited to begin this journey with all of you. Are you ready to put your best foot forward and show up with confidence? This tool is here to help you evolve into the artist you are meant to be. Just always remember to believe, become, and be ready. Add a new skill set or refine what you already know. So here we go. My special guest today is the wonderful Sean Baytu. He is an actor, works at mocap, video games. He's a stunt actor, stunt choreographer, teacher, voice actor. What else am I missing? Are you also a dancer, Sean?
That's actually probably one of the things I don't do. It's on the list, down the line. But yes, that's accurate. That pretty much covers it pretty well.
Well, welcome to Industry Talk, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
We just started a workshop, a level one of stage combat with Sean on Sunday. And I'm full of energy. We like after 4 hours, I didn't want to stop. I was ready to fight some more. Being a dancer, it's all about choreography for me. So I can't wait to use all the skill sets in order to create that choreography at the end.
That's awesome.
Let's talk about you, Sean. How did you get started in the business? And how did you get involved in mocap, video games, something that we haven't spoken about yet on Industry Talk?
Thanks, Connie. So I took, I guess, more or less the traditional route. I went to a theater school. I went to the Dawson Professional Theater Program in the mid-90s. I don't want to date myself too much here. you know, it's a theater program, but you learn the basics of acting, right? And then the skills you learn there, you can apply to all sorts of things across the board that require, you know, actors and creativity and acting craft. So I did the Dawson program about 3 years. It's also where I was introduced to and fell in love with stage combat, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit. Through that, after I graduated, I then sought out an agent, which was the next step that you had to, I mean, finding work without an agent is extremely difficult. And something we had learned in Dawson was to always be prepared for, you know, what might be out there. You know, you have to be adaptable as an actor. So I always carried a headshot and a resume with me wherever I went. And I happened to be, I don't know why, but I was at this a casting house called Elite Casting. And I was talking to one of the guys who works there and telling him I was looking for an agent. And he's like, hey, man, I know this woman just down the street on Saint Laurent Street who just opened an office and she's probably still looking for actors. So you should go. Should swing by. So I said, you know, no time like the present. So I left there and went straight to her office, just kind of cold dropped in. And we spoke, had a really nice connection. This was Sandy Martinez, who is one of your guests recently.
We love Sandy. And Sandy talks about you in her podcast. Keep going.
We could have a whole podcast, I'm sure, where it's just you and I gushing over why Sandy's so awesome. Yeah. So I went in. Sandy at the time had a business partner. There were two agents there, this other guy named Sean. And I spoke to them. They said, okay, can you come back? Can you audition for us? Which I liked that they weren't just going to take me. They wanted to kind of see what I had to offer. So I came back, did this little monologue for them. And that was it. Sandy took me on and I've been with her ever since. And then through her, she's the only agent I've ever had. Most actors I know, they go through, you know, a few agents every few years. Agents retire. They can sometimes not be very compatible. But Sandy, what I love about her is she's not just my agent. She's my friend. You know, she's someone who inspires me. She's a confidant. She's an advisor. Like she does all these incredible things with her energy and her presence. Really kind of cemented my love of Sandy and my faith in her was a few years into our relationship. She had quite a large roster with her previous agency because it wasn't always the one she has now called MCM. And she announced that she's going to be cutting her roster in half, literally like just getting rid of about half of her roster because it's just impossible to manage that many people. And I was new and I was not working much, if at all. I was kind of still very green and wet behind the ears and, you know, doing a bit of theater here and small things here and there. But she told me she's going to keep me on as one of her clients. And I remember asking her why, like, I don't earn all that much. I don't work all that much. And she said that for her, it wasn't about that. It wasn't about the business aspect so much, the dollar value of an actor, but she connected with me as a person, my spirit, with my energy, and she saw potential in me. And she knew it was just a question of time before I would have the opportunities I needed to be successful. And that's exactly what happened. I stuck with her And she supported me throughout the years and always believed in me. And eventually, you know, I started working. So, you know, she provided me all these opportunities over the years, whether it's in film, video games too was a big chapter of my life.
Which I'm excited to speak about, because I want to recap this, because you met the opportunity, you seized it at Elite Casting, where you had your picture and CV ready. And
yeah.
Someone told you, it's all about connection, networking, yeah. You know, someone told you something and you took action. How many people don't take action? And then months after, they're wondering, oh, but who's out there and what's happening? You didn't do that. And that's something that I want to refresh in everybody's mind, because we hear about this and it seems so simple, right?
Yeah. But
yet some people don't hear and listen to the messages. These are life's messages through people, through encounters out of nowhere. And you were just ready. And you said it from the beginning. I'm just ready. I was prepared, you know.
Yeah. Like, life brings you opportunities if you're willing to seize them, you know. And I know this is cheesy and it's a bit of a cheesy expression, but, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right? You know, a mantra I use a lot is luck is when preparedness meets opportunity, right? So prepare. This is a good example of that. I was prepared. I had a CV and a photo and a willingness to go. And opportunity was Sandy just kind of being there at that time and place, you know. And I have a similar story to that, actually, which is a good tie-in with how I started in mocap, because I'd been hearing about motion capture and it was very new back in the day. I'd never conceived of that. When I was in theater school, I'm like, oh, I'm going to do theater and I'm going to do TV and I'm going to do maybe some action stuff on film and you know, maybe voices for cartoons. I never envisioned that the majority of my work would be in video games, which is one of the things I love most. I'm a huge gamer, huge fan of video games. I've played them my whole life. I've always been interested in them. So to be able to work in that milieu is amazing. So I kind of brought that idea to Sandy about motion capture and video games and Ubisoft and all that stuff, because, you know, a friend of mine had told me about this game he heard they were making. And I'm like, oh God, I'd love to have a part in that game. But she then poked around and got me an audition for Assassin's Creed 2 as Machiavelli. And I actually got the part, you know. And you know, you talk about taking chances and just being ready and being prepared and just going for it. I was at a recording studio called Game On, who today are much bigger. They do mocap and they do all sorts of stuff. They're one of the biggest ones in Montreal. But I was there to do either an audition or a gig, I forget which. And I see a good friend of mine who works in the industry, a guy named Simon Peacock, who's a voice actor and voice director, mocap director. He does all sorts of stuff. Great guy. And I see him having lunch outside with somebody. And I was early, you know, it's always good to be early for your auditions, people. And so I decided, you know, instead of just sitting in the waiting room by myself, like a putz waiting 20 minutes to be seen, why don't I go say hi to Simon? And I won't intrude, but, you know, I'll just go say hi to them because I want to be friendly. So I go outside, I see Simon, like, hey, man, how you doing? He's like, hey, oh, hey, Sean. He goes, this is Sylvain, who works at Ubisoft. You want to join us? So I sat down. I'm like, what do you do, Sylvain? He's like, oh, I work at Ubisoft. I'm in charge of motion capture. And I'm like, motion capture? What is that? So I asked him all these questions and tells me all about it. And then I did something I've rarely done in my life, but I did it because I was very passionate about this thing. I kind of pitched myself. You know, I kind of tried to sell what I had to offer as an actor. So I'm like, listen, man, if ever you're looking for anyone to do this kind of work, you know, I've got martial arts training. I've got a black belt in karate. I've got a movement background and theater trained. I'm bilingual. I'm a gamer. You know, I was just kind of like just pitching all this stuff at him, give myself value. Well, I mean, tell him about the value I had. I wasn't exaggerating anything. And, you know, he looked at me and he's like, I'll keep you in mind. Which to me, you know, was him saying, whatever, buddy, like so many people want this kind of work. Why would I, you know, we have processes to do this. But like a week or two later, I got a call through Sandy saying, look, can we have you come in and do a half day of mocap? So I went in. That was my first time ever doing mocap. I had a knack for it. They liked me. I started going back. And then that led to Assassin's Creed, which in time led to, you know, Watch Dogs, which is, you know, one of the biggest things I've done. And then voice work and then Rainbow Six and all these and Outlast and all these other things I've done. So when I, you know, took my first tentative few steps to that world, they eventually led to bigger things. And I do think I have the right skill set to be good at that stuff. You know, I mean, given my background and my interests, it aligns nicely. But I believe passion goes a long way. And if you're passionate about something, passion kind of dispels fear. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of move ahead, even though you might be nervous or whatever. You know, I wasn't being, you know, intrusive, and I was respecting their privacy and all that. You know, but when I saw an opportunity, I took it, and it really paid off. People's biggest obstacles in life is themselves, right? Like, people are always getting in their own way, saying, oh, I don't have that much value, or they're not going to care, or I'm wasting their time, or I'm wasting my time. And, you know, it's so rewarding when you ignore that voice in your head and just kind of, you know, go for it. So I don't know who said this once, but someone once said, like, imagine what you would be capable of in life if you weren't afraid, right? And I think that's really freeing. Not super easy to apply all the time, but very freeing. And sometimes, you know, my mantra is, if I don't want to do something because I'm scared of it, that's usually a good reason to do it.
Right.
That's me. It's like my brain and my soul saying there's lessons to be learned here, and you're just afraid of the unknown. And I'm like, well, let me confront that fear, and it'll make me a stronger person. So that's how I kind of got into video games and voice acting. And then through the voice acting stuff, I also expanded out to do like dubbing or commercial work and stuff like that. And, you know, I still do, not so much anymore, but I used to do theater for a while, but I haven't done that in a while. But I like to diversify as much as possible. So, you know, video games, voice work, animation, dubbing, film, television, commercials, more recently directing. I direct voice now. I coach, I teach stage combat, as you well know. So I just kind of, you know, fingers in many pies, if you will.
And I believe in opening all the doors, because why stuck in one little place where you could do so much, and you explore and your passion speaks, because obviously all these doors have opened for you because, one, you believed in yourself. Did you ever have that negative self-talk where it's like, no, don't go there? Because for me, passion drives me every day. I am not afraid. I just go, 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 go. Since I'm a teen, it's in me. So I'm wondering, in your case, was it always there? Did you always believe that all this was going to happen?
I wouldn't say I've always believed I'd have the level of, you know, relative success I have now. And I also don't want that to become this false illusion for people, because to me, especially as an artist in Montreal, success doesn't mean all that much in the long term, right? Like, I've done some pretty big games that have been, you know, done well, and a fair amount of recognition from fans, which is absolutely lovely. But that doesn't mean I'm working all the time either. Like, last year was probably the worst year I've had career-wise in a decade, right? Mm-hmm. But I also don't let that get me down. I view that as an exception, not the rule, right? So was I always this confident in my ability and, you know, to be successful? Well, no. I think what builds that is the ability to be not just introspective, but retrospective, if you will. So if you can look back on your accomplishments, where you used to be, where you are now, for most people, if you're you know, driving towards something, even if you're not succeeding every day, it's kind of like the stock market. If you look at the stock market, you know, it's an upwards curve. The more you zoom in, the more you see there's little, you know, pitfalls and downtrends, but ultimately it always recovers and goes up, right? Mm-hmm. So I really viewed my career that way, that every year I look back and I go, well, what have I achieved? And and that went from I had a couple auditions to I had a couple auditions, but I got two callbacks, to I got three callbacks and I booked one thing, to, you know, this I booked because someone knows me already and I skipped the audition process and I just went straight to the casting, which to me is the dream as an actor, is to have work come to you and not you always have to go to it, especially when it comes to acting, because people see, the only example they have of success are stars, usually, unless they personally know an actor. So you see like, oh, you know, Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman and, you know, whoever is, you know, all these mega stars who are in everything. But it's not like you have a switch that you go from being nobody, then one day you get one lucky break and now you're a mega star. Like, most of these people built their careers up that exact same way. Small victories over time, compounded over time with, you know, combined with the essential quality of never giving up on your passion and on your dream. Because I know lots of talented people who stopped their path of being an actor because they just weren't succeeding fast enough, right? I've been a very patient in my career. It took me at least 10 years for it to really get started. And the last, say, 15 have been great. And I'm hoping that continues. And I have this foundation of people and places I've worked with and things I've done and praise I've received and, you know, actor nominations and whatever, you know, all these tangible reminders, if I doubt myself, that yes, I have talent and I have success and I have higher ability as an actor. So, because, you know, we can get inside our heads and go, oh, you know, maybe I'm not as good as I thought, or I'm not, you know, maybe I
shouldn't
be doing this. And I know, and that's lovely. And I know, most importantly, I love myself. So yeah, even if someone were to come up to me and go, you suck, you're a terrible actor, I'd be like, well, it's your opinion, but I know a lot of people who disagree with you, right? So exterior tangible reminders are great too. And I don't just mean your friends and family, which is lovely, but like, I did a game that came out like 4 or 5 years ago. And to this day, every single week, almost without exception, I get tweets from people I've never met before who are like, hey man, I just want to say, I played your game. I loved your character. He meant so much to me. He's one of my favorite characters ever. Or, you know, he helped me when I was going through a really dark period. Or all these wonderful affirmations coming from people saying how much my performance and investment in a performance positively impacted their life. So when I take all these things and I gather them, it's impossible for me to go, oh, I suck and I'm never going to amount to anything, right? So do I have doubts? Absolutely. Do I have periods of self-doubt or, you know, question myself, like, am I doing the right thing here? Of course, but that's only normal. Well, not usually very long lasting, because then I'll eventually book something and go, oh, yes, right. People do like working with me and it's great. And
people do like working with you. Yeah. Those messages from fans must be really nice, because you don't know when they're actually at home playing those video games. And, you know, you do something and impact their lives through a video game. But Sean, this is my question, because some people don't know what mocap is, video games. What does an actor in mocap do and an actor in video games do, or stunt work? Or just explain to us the difference. We need to understand. Break it down for us.
So mocap means motion capture, mm-hmm. which is a way of capturing performances from live actors to gather data about their movement the relative movement in space, and then to process that data into imagery that is applied to video games and sometimes film. So, you know, Assassin's Creed, Tomb Raider, Last of Us, God of War, all those games use motion capture when it's cinematic scenes, like, you know, the cut scenes with people acting and emoting. Also, a lot of movements in the game from characters are based on mocap, so walking and fighting and all that stuff. And also, it's used in movies, so like Avatar, you know, Lord of the Rings, King Kong, a lot of those are done with motion capture as well. So how motion capture works is you wear this form-fitting suit that has these little reflectors on it, and you're in something called a volume, which is this giant empty space. And there's usually, it depends on the production company, but, you know, like anywhere from like, I guess, 16 to 64 infrared cameras that are ringing the ceiling and at, you know, floor level more or less, or maybe knee level type of thing. And these cameras emit infrared light, which hit your reflectors and bounce back. And those cameras also capture that signal. So the reflectors on your body create like a 3D shell of your character, like not a skeleton, because it's not inside you, it's your outside. So all your pivot points, shoulders, elbow, neck, hips, knees, etc., are captured. So when you move, the dots move in space with you, and you get this like 3D outline of a character. So emoting, acting, walking, running, fighting, everything we do is captured extremely faithfully. And then they animate over that data for cutscenes and video games or movies, and it looks way more realistic. So before motion capture, how people would animate things in video games was a process called keyframing, which is basically animating one frame at a time on the computer and then linking them. Just kind of like, you know, old school drawing animation, right? Like cell animation. That's why when things are keyframed, it looks more like stop motion, or it looks very jerky and it's not very fluid, because it's missing all the thousands of little body language cues we give off when we move. So motion capture captures all of that and transports it into the game. When they record sound, like your lines now, and your face at the same time as the body, that's called performance capture. So it's like motion capture, but with the helmet. So they capture your face, all your expressions, laughing, smiling, your eyes, everything. And there's a mic to capture your dialogue. So when you do a scene in a video game, they can get all aspects of your performance at once, mm-hmm. as opposed to back in the day, they would record your dialogue in a booth mm-hmm. and then have you or another actor come in and do the body movements and then try to sync the two of them up, which didn't always provide as a high fidelity rendition of a performance because they're kind of disjointed a bit.
So do you have to be an actor to do this?
It's performance. It's still storytelling, right? So, you know, what an actor does is they find the truth, the believability, the verisimilitude, if you will, of a character who's not them, sometimes close to them, sometimes not, and delivering that in a way that's, you know, truthful, but also entertaining. So it requires a lot of, you know, craft and skill and understanding of dramaturgy, character, status, delivery, relationships, history, like all these subtle things that we don't think about when we just talk to each other as humans. But when you're creating an artificial person or an artificial situation, if those details are lacking, it'll look fake to people.
Right.
So, you know, it's funny you should ask me this question, because yesterday, actually, I was doing motion capture for a video game, and I was talking to one of the guys who was directing us, and he was saying, oh, you know, this technology is great. The one that we're using says I can actually do some work at home. So sometimes I will mocap myself, these tiny little bits we need for the game, and not have to bother, you know, hiring actors to do that. He says, but they're only for the most basic things, you know, picking up a rock or bending over to grab something or walking through a door. The minute there's any kind of interaction, dialogue, performance, they're like, I have to use actors because he just doesn't know how to do that, right? If you think about our job, there's a reason why acting's hard to succeed in and to just do in the first place, because it's a very unnatural thing we're doing, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to be truthful in an art that's inherently false, mm-hmm. right? You'll never really be yourself acting unless, I guess, maybe it's even if you're doing your own autobiography, like movie, yeah. Yeah. You're still in front of a camera. You're still in front of a fake situation you're recreating, right? So, you know, it's that weird dichotomy I find, but it's between truth and lies, and there's that sweet spot where we resolve. But yes, I think being an actor is a huge
step.
A huge step in doing mocap. And in fact, the only time I've worked with non-actors in motion capture is when they would hire people with specialized skills that they couldn't find actors who had. And then they would come in for things that didn't require a lot of scene work. So for example, I worked on a game at one point that involved roller skating, and they needed one man, one woman. So the man was me, because I can roller skate. I'm not great at it, but I can roller skate. I had my own skates. I brought them. And then the woman they hired was a professional roller derby player, right? So she wasn't an actor. She wasn't even a stunt person. She just did roller derby, but she was amazing at skating. So in those specific circumstances, they hired a non-actor because they're like, okay, well, can you do a backwards this or a spin?
She had her
special skills, like a special skills extra or something, right?
Exactly.
And so they hired me because I could do that stuff easily. But if there was any kind of, anytime you need to connect with another person or portray any kind of genuine emotion, then you need an actor, because that's really hard for non-actors to do. Because, you know, you too, as an actor, you know that the greatest factor in being believable as an actor is vulnerability. Right.
Definitely.
And that is inherently the thing most people are absolutely terrified of showing. I mean, ordinary people who are, you know, ordinary. I mean, everyone who's not an actor. I'm not saying we're not ordinary people, too. But it's this fear. I read once that the number one fear people had above death was fear of humiliation, fear of public speaking,
yes.
Especially to say, yeah. Like, can you address your development team of 30 people and update them, whatever. And people are like falling apart and having a nervous breakdown. Whereas I'm not afraid to be vulnerable in front of any number of people. You could say, Sean, can you go talk to a stadium of 30,000 people in 5 minutes from now? And I'd be like, yeah, sure. What do you want me to say? You know, I'd be afraid of tripping up, but I wouldn't be like paralyzed by fear and all that
stuff. You're ready to be.
But that's it. But that's part of being an actor. It's not just learning the skills. It's the experience of life. Like I just taught this class, this voice class, and something I told them is that, you know, I break the actor, the experience of being an actor, the success of being an actor, into three parts. There's talent,
yeah,
which you don't have a lot of control over. You're born with it or you're not. You can hone or sharpen your talent, but it's kind of an invariable. There's craft or skills that you have complete control over. How much schooling, how much research, how much collaboration, how much practice do you do? And then there's experience, which is free in a sense, given time, right? So if you just live your life, say yes to opportunities, gather experience by succeeding, by failing, by doing anything at all, you know, by living life, you know, I've, for example, I don't want to be morbid, but like, you know, both my parents are alive and well, and I'm very grateful for that. But, you know, they won't be forever. And once I lose a parent, because I've never really lost anyone close to me yet, and I'm in my 40s, and I've just been very grateful and fortunate that no one close to me has passed away ever. But the experience of that is traumatizing, and it changes you. And as an actor, it's something you can draw upon to be more truthful when you portray an emotion that's close to that. Okay. So I'm not saying, you know, it's great to have people dying around you. I'm just saying whatever experience you have, if you go live in Chile for 6 months and help build orphanages, well, that's, you're going to have all these experiences that are going to profoundly change you as a person, and that'll make you a better actor. Right. So those three factors are the kind of the variables you got to identify, like, what do I need to work on? And, you know, what do I have and what do I don't?
Let me meet my opportunity now that we're speaking about this whole networking and, you know, how things happen. Listen, I'm a dancer. I want to do motion capture. Is there any dancing in motion capture?
There is. I mean, if it's a game about dancing, then, they would have need of dancers. I know there's these dance games that exist where you, your PlayStation or Xbox is like a camera that captures you and you can dance and follows you. So that they hired dancers for, because they do the choreography and the routine. Like, if they hired me for that, that wouldn't be great, because I'm an okay dancer, but I'm not a professional dancer.
Right.
So, you know, the truth of me not being a professional dancer would show in mocap, and that would be a disservice to what they're trying to do. That too is a question of opportunity, right? Like, if they're doing a dance game and you're a dancer, that could be your in. If they're doing a roller skating game and you're roller derby person, that could be your in.
I'm going to look into that for Ubisoft and dancers, because if that could open doors for dancers that are not aware of this, especially we have a lot of them in the academy that are triple threats, I will try that. But moving on to, okay, mocap, you broke it down. Video games, when you speak about video games, what is the difference between mocap video games?
Well, video games are a type of media, and mocap is a type of performance. So technically you could break it down that video games as a media falls into two categories of performance, which would be motion capture or performance capture and or voice work, right? So those are different in the sense that, you know, one of them you're in a booth, one of them you're wearing a suit and a volume. In terms of type of performance, I wouldn't say there's much difference when it comes to motion capture or voice acting for video games, because video games have become very realistic. And because nowadays, and because they have the ability to really capture a lot of detail and a lot of intricacies of performance, people can just be themselves as actors. They can be much more nuanced and subtle in their performance. So it depends on the game, of course. And if you know about video games or the style of games or what you're auditioning for, that could help tailor your performance, just like you would tailor your performance to a certain type of director, let's say. There isn't much difference. I'd say that mocap requires a very specific skill set. It hasn't been established for long, so there's not a lot of precedent you can draw from, right? As I sometimes say, you know, if you want to be a theater actor, you have thousands of years of history to draw from. But, you know, film's been around for, you know, over 100 years, so you have that to draw upon. Mocap, it's been, what, 15 years? So people don't know how to, they not only have mystery, they're not only mystified about what will they have to do for mocap, but they don't have a lot of resources to look at to find out, right? So there's workshops happening now. Ubisoft has workshops they give through ACTRA, which I recommend anyone who wants to do mocap, try to take the workshop or participate.
It's fun. It's really fun. My son did it. They used it for teens too.
Yeah. Well, they need all sorts of people for mocap. I mean, yeah. I've done mocap with little children, and I've done mocap with like the elderly. Again, because it's very realistic now, they tend to cast people way closer to what they want now, much more like film. But that's the thing, like the point I'm trying to make is mocap exists kind of between film and theater. It's of both worlds, but also of neither. So you have to, and that rhymed, but you have to kind of know the craft of mocap to see the difference, you know. But like a few things off the top of my head would be theater and film restrict you in how you can move because of either the audience or the camera. That doesn't happen in mocap. There is no camera. There's no audience.
Right.
Film, though, can be very technically demanding in terms of hitting your lights or hitting your mark. There are no lights or marks in mocap. Marks on occasion, depending on stuff, but you know, it's freer. In theater, you have to imagine your environment. In film, you don't, because you are in that environment. Mocap is closer to theater in that way, right? But in theater, you have to project because you need to reach the back row. In film, you just have to talk at whatever level you'd be talking at. That's closer to mocap, because mocap, you're mic'd and you don't have a live audience. So it's either by doing mocap that you learn these things, or by studying it, you'll see that, you know, there are subtle differences. But getting into mocap, if you have a strong foundation as an actor, you know about character work and presence and just, you know, all that stuff, I'd say you have good, anyone with those skills would have as good a shot as anyone else. And then it's just a question of learning the technical aspect of it.
You being at Dawson, theater student back then, stage combat was one of your classes. Did you just literally fall in love with the acting or the stage combat?
I didn't know what I wanted to do as an actor when I joined the Dawson Professional Theater Program. I didn't really know what was out there. So, you know, we had something that I really like about the program is they have a lot of different disciplines they cover. So not only do you learn about, you know, Shakespeare and, you know, dramaturgy and, but there's improv, there's movement, there's stage combat, there's even, you know, us being roped into higher other years productions of plays, doing front of house, lighting, sound, props, you know, getting to learn different aspects of the business kind of opens up your mind to possibilities and lets people drift towards the things that they're passionate about, right? So, I mean, I loved comedy. Comedy's always been my first love. It's what I came into the program with. It was a ton of comedic energy and I applied it to everything I did. I still love it. I just don't have the opportunity to do it as much here because everything seems really dramatic and serious. I auditioned for it for some reason.
But you are a dramatic actor. You want to, like, you're like, because of the stage combat, because you're a stunt actor too. Like, I mean, I think.
But I love it all though. Like, I love comedy and I love fighting. I can combine those two too. You know what I mean? Yeah. But when I started doing stage combat at Dawson, then I was like, oh wow. I never realized there was a real craft to doing this. And the creative potential of it really kind of stuck with me. And then I was luckily fortunate enough that my teacher at the time, Kimberly Barfus, said, look, I'm going to Fight Directors Canada this summer. And if you come along, you and your buddy, you come along, they'll give us all a rebate of like $500 or whatever, because it's a pretty expensive program. And we can all benefit from this and you can learn stage combat, because that's where I learned stage combat. So I said, yeah, that'd be great. So I went to Toronto for 2 weeks, did Fight Directors Canada, and that opened up my mind even more. I learned quarterstaff and rapier, and I just really fell in love with the whole kind of structuring of violence, in a sense, to make it safe, to make it accessible. And it was just for personal reasons, because I thought maybe I could do action stuff or whatever. And I did for a while do a lot of theater that involved live fighting and stuff. I did a one-man show at one point, which was really cool. Kind of just organically, people were like, hey, can you teach me how to do that? So I would. And then eventually, Dawson was like, hey, do you want to, I was teaching an improv class there at the continuing education program at night, not part of the theater program. And then that wasn't really working. So I said, guys, look, I have a slot. It's not working. Can I teach stage combat? Like, I think it would be really cool and I feel confident and people would be, and they're like, yeah, go for it. So then I started teaching at Dawson, and then that turned into working at ASM. And then that turned into working at a whole bunch of different studios and schools. And I worked at Strayon and just a bunch of local places, because I realized almost no one taught this stuff in town. I know some people who practice stage combat, but almost no one who teaches, at least not on the accessible level that I offer it. So that just kind of happened. Like, people kept coming to me to say, can you share your knowledge?
And we're learning from you. And this is what's so fun and exciting. Now, out of all of this, out of everything you do, is there one that you prefer?
It's a really tough call, because I love so many things. But probably my greatest love, I think, is motion capture. Just because I get to be as complete an actor as I can be, but without any of the other limiting factors of the other types of medium. Like, I feel like I was really born to do motion capture. I thrive when I have to express myself physically as well as verbally. I absolutely love voice work as well, but voice work's a little less complete because it's just my voice. But there's something to be said about isolating one part of your instrument and just focusing a performance through that, which I find really challenging and really fun and really rewarding. And I really believe you drift into the things you're meant to do as an actor, the things you do best. When I first graduated, my plan, my idea of what my career would be like was like, okay, I'm going to have like a regular part on a sitcom. I'm going to do an animated series as a lead, and I'm going to do like action film stuff. And then I know I'll be successful. And I've done almost none of that stuff, Connie, right? I don't think I've ever had a lead on a TV show. I've never had a big part in a movie, unless it's like independent. And I've done very little animation, original animation. But I've done a ton of mocap. I've been in video games. I've done lots of voice work. I do a lot of dubbing, right? Because I'm good at those things. So what I thought I'd be doing and what I am doing are very different.
Oh, good.
And had I, determined that what counts as success is those specific things I mentioned at first, then I'd never feel successful, right? Okay. So I find you have to keep an open mind as an actor to recognize success that maybe that you didn't expect, but that can be yours all the same if you're true to yourself and you follow your passions. I love voice and I love stunt fighting. I especially love medieval weapon stuff. I love like swords and shields,
yeah, you do like that.
Axes and all that stuff and knife work. I love martial arts too. So I love martial arts fighting. I love combining the two. And I absolutely love doing choreography, which is working out a narrative of conflict or violence between two or more characters. I find that extremely rewarding because it basically lets me apply all my skills as an actor, as a storyteller, as a choreographer, as an artist. I find that stuff super, super rewarding. So the stuff I get most excited about is motion capture and I'd say voice, because you also relate most closely to video games, which is something
that's
a very big source of joy in my life. I play games every day. So to be able to work in the medium I love and to then buy and play really cool games that I'm in is rewarding in a way that I think even more than like seeing yourself on film, I think, because you get to interact a bit with your performance. Yeah. And, you know, on film, you'll see a character for up to 2 hours, but in a game, you could be with another character for like 30, 40, 100 hours. So I think that's why people connect to Wrench so much and Watch Dogs, because they spend dozens and dozens and dozens of hours with this guy. So their investment in the character, but transitive properties, becomes investment in the actor. And that's why I hear from fans going, hey, I love your work and thanks for all the joy you brought to my life. So, you know, working in that milieu is also one of my favorite things because it generates an impact on people that film or TV, at least in my experience, hasn't done in the same way.
What's the difference between stunt work and stage combat?
So stage combat is usually live, stunt fighting, but for theater, for stage. And stunt fighting is usually stunts for film or television. So the techniques differ a little bit. Live stage combat, you have to kind of generate your own noises when you hit each other, and you have to do the whole choreography in one go because it's live. Whereas stunt fighting, usually it's broken up into individual chunks, and a lot of the sound effects and all that are done in post-production. So they both have their challenges. They're very similar techniques, but there are subtle differences between the two when it comes to the medium they're being presented in.
Which one do you prefer?
That's a great question. I think I have a slight preference for stage combat, maybe because it's what I learned first.
Right.
And stage combat's more immediately rewarding. I think that's why, because, you know, when you do theater, your interaction and your reward from the audience for your performance is immediate. You feel it. When you do film, it's very kind of, clinical, because you're just doing these things very in a technical sense, and you only get that feedback at the premiere or when the film happens. So I love the immediacy of the audience reacting to real-time violence and kind of trying to keep up and wondering, like, how do they do that? But also, like, what's going to happen next? I find that very exciting. Whereas film, like I said, it's a bit more piecemeal, but you can do more in film. You can also get more elaborate, and film is more forgiving because you can mess up and because it's not live, right?
Yeah.
So I think I have a slight preference for stage combat, but I think they're both super fun.
Thank you for sharing all this information. On Sunday, watching you teach stage combat, and someone asked you a question about a self-tape and how you integrate stage combat in your self-tape. And I was sitting there and I watched you do what you do, being an actor and integrating stage combat. And then I'm like this going, I see the difference on the level of performance on the self-tape, because you brought in everything we wanted to see compared to someone that doesn't have those skill sets, whatever you have was extraordinary. And I'm like this going, there's no brainer. So everybody at home thinking I did a good self-tape, you have no idea what I witnessed on Sunday. You're not even close to what I saw on Sunday when Sean delivered something really small that was like, of course you got the part. No one else could do that. I was just amazed. And I'm like this going, it's too bad that people don't share each other's self-tape in order to see the difference. Because they're at home going, I did something good. You think you did something good. You have no idea what just came in. And that was like, in my head, I've been a casting director. That's what I do. Like, I always refer people in my domain. I'm there. People don't see the difference, that those little things that make a big change. And I'm sad because we don't teach that. But what I saw on Sunday, I'm like, if only everybody would know how you could step up your own game. If only you knew how to do everything else.
Yeah, that's a wonderful point, Connie. I mean, I don't want to put people down either by saying that if you're not doing stage combat, you don't know what you're doing as an actor, right? Clearly. I think what that represents is more successful actors or people who can take risks or think outside the box or step outside their comfort zone. Or, you know, I used to be very, you know, maybe as part of my like OCD type of thing. But, you know, when I first graduated, I thought, you know, I kind of broke acting down into a formula, which is like, learn your lines, you know, make choices, be on time. And if you do all that right, you'll get the part. And that's not true at all, right? None of that's true. And it took me years to realize, well, okay, you got to kind of forget what you learned and then kind of integrate it, but on a subconscious level, you know, that's where experience kicks in, right? Experience to me takes your skills, which are all these little different points, and it kind of mushes them together into like a paste, if you will, that's adaptable to any situation, right? So like this performance, you know, it's a little bit of stage combat, but it's also a little bit of improv. It's also a little bit of this character I did in this play 6 years ago. It's a little bit of my love for this actor or this TV show, right? Like being able to integrate those things without making it overt, I think ultimately is what really good experienced actors do, you know? So in terms of like self-tapes and being better at, you know, offering up what you have, again, it comes down to fear, right? People go, well, I shouldn't do that. Or what if they don't like this? Or what if? Who cares? Do your thing, right? Well, not to depress anyone, but I'm pretty sure that some casting directors, you know, they get a self-tape and in the first 4 seconds, they know if they're going to cast this person or not because they're like, oh, he's too tall, right? That's not that actor's fault. So my point is, if you're going to get potentially brushed aside through, you know, factors that you have no control over, why not take a risk? Why not use that as an opportunity to express some side of yourself that you really believe in? Because worst case scenario, you still won't get the part. But best case scenario, you'll either get the part or they'll go, wow, that was a great audition. This guy's not right, but I'm gonna keep it in mind. Like I remember on a few occasions, I auditioned for Ubisoft for various characters and various games they were doing. And on occasion, instead of just going against a white background and just, you know, a medium shot and just doing my lines, I would be like at one point it was like for a bartender in a game. I forget what the game was. So instead of just, you know, standing in front of a white wall, I'm like, oh, I just moved into this place and the basement's kind of not set up yet. So let's push this counter and that'll be the bar. And I'll set up my iPad as a TV and we'll set it up like a bar. And then we'll have my friend who was over the time. He can be a patron and my wife can shoot it. And I made a scene, right? And there was stage combat in it. Like I beat a guy and I even took like a little, I had some fake blood that I like put on my knuckles as I was doing the scene and like did it in one take. And it was this whole production. I mean, I had the time and the resources to do it. So I did it and I didn't get the part, but I did get an email from my agent, from whoever was casting it saying, Sandy, could you please forward this email to Sean? I want him to know how much we love getting his auditions, the time and the care he puts into them. It's always so entertaining. It's always so different than what everyone sends in. And we always look forward to watching his performances, right? And that really buoyed me because it was validating that I wasn't just wasting my time or doing some kind of faux pas, you know?
Yes.
You have to develop a sense for this thing. You don't want to go over the line or disrespect anyone. But, you know, because what we do isn't finance, it's not the stock market, it's art, right? So there is no one right way to do something. That's up to you as an artist to decide, you know, what represents me and what could, you know, what aspect of me would best serve the project I'm auditioning for that I want to be a part of. So I think that's a really good attitude to have. So, you know, if that means increase your skills, take stage combat, learn how to be more expressive physically and how to confront or express violence, then that opens up more options and adds those little points that experience will eventually like mush together into this, you know, whole you as an artist type of persona. So whether it's dance or stage combat or horseback riding or skiing or music or whatever, you know, pursue it, embrace it, be passionate about it, because you never know when it'll lead to an opportunity.
Ah, beautifully said. This is how we're going to end our show. Thank you so much.
Amazing. Thanks for having me, Connie. I love talking to you.
I do. And you're so passionate. It's so unbelievable. And I can't wait to do choreography with you. All of you listeners, go follow Sean on his page and see what he does and maybe add that skill set, because Sean is an amazing teacher. I'm taking his class. It's a dream of mine. It's been for years and I'm finally doing it. There is no age to start something. So
that is very true.
So go ahead and do whatever you want to do and express yourself. Like Sean says, go for it. Full out.
And if I can, if anyone wants to get in touch with me or whatever, I have a website, which is just seanbeichu.com. So you can go there. I'm also on Twitter and on Instagram. So just, you know, type my name in and you'll find me. And I have a fan page as well on Facebook.
You can find Sean. He's easy to find. We're Montreal. Lucky us. Thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome, Connie. Thanks for having me.